From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore. Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It's Danny, Dave, and Moore, and we are joined by Bradley McDougald, who is with us. Bradley, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. How are you guys doing today?
Well, we're doing quite well. We want to get this finished as quick as possible because you got lunch standing in front of you.
Yes, I do.
What's on the menu today?
I'm doing the same thing I usually do every day. I've been on this little diet right now. I'm trying to cut back on calories. I've just been eating a smoothie after practice.
Why are you cutting back on calories? You look great.
I know. I just want to lean out a little bit more. I just got this thing about playing light, you know, moving faster, less tension on the knees. I don't know. It's been working for me, so I kind of want to stick to the schedule.
Do you have some kind of a treat there or something that you like to get at the store every once in a while? Because it seems to me I've run into you there. We won't talk about why I'm there, but do you have is it gummy bears or
that you talking about the gas station across the street?
Yeah,
the corner store. That they have the best gummy worms, probably all of Seattle. Stop there at least twice a week, pick it up for the DBs, and it seems like I can only find it at that store. So
really,
I gotta go.
And there's something about the quality and freshness of their gummy worms.
Yes, it's Albanese gummy worms, if you're wondering. But go check it out.
I had no idea there was a difference in the quality of gummy worms.
Oh, you're not a gummy bear connoisseur then.
Seriously, yeah. What makes a good gummy worm?
Freshness and texture. It needs to be squishy, because there's hard gummy bears,
right?
You know, like the ones that are like, oh wait, it's supposed to be gummy, so you want it to be gummy. Then it's like the texture of it. You know, you have some bad ones like stale. It's kind of, you know, Swedish fish. I don't like Swedish fish. No. I don't like the texture of them.
Yeah. You know what's good, though, is the Scandinavian swimmers from Trader Joe's. Same thing.
That
but
sounds like
super
a knockoff,
tasty.
A cheap knockoff.
It's an expensive knockoff.
But they're really
knockoff.
Good. They're way better. Swedish fish stink.
I'm telling you, I don't
like the texture.
With the gummies, there's not a bigger variance of quality in any candy than gummy bears.
Yeah.
Because if you get the hard ones, it's terrible.
Might as well throw them away.
Yep.
Well, are you doing like a low carb thing or?
Not really. I just kind of just challenge myself. Really. I feel like I'm in a good weight right now. I just kind of want to keep everything status quo. So it's kind of just something I started. After practice, I'm not really that hungry just because it's still got a lot of adrenaline pumping. We just got out the heat. I'm just looking for something smooth and refreshing. I already don't eat that much as it is. So I'm probably good with like two meals a day, two solid meals. I kind of skip breakfast, which isn't a good thing, but something I'm used to. And it's kind of just, I don't know, once the season gets going and we start moving around a lot, the less I tend to eat, and that's kind of how it goes.
So when you're watching TV at night, you don't feel like just snacking away? Because Dave and I talk about that. That's our worst time is in the evening.
So I replace that. I do. I snack like everybody else, but I try to eat fruit nowadays. After 9 o'clock, it's only fruit. And if I'm eating at all, I try to cut off by 9 o'clock. Just instilling discipline, you know, just trying to get an extra edge any way I can. I've been feeling like my body's definitely taking it well. You know, I've had a lot more energy. I've been lighter. My body feels good. I've been moving well. So I'm just kind of stick with it as long as I can.
Jim, you know, if everybody, you know, the program that I've talked about, if somebody would just hit me over the head at 7 o'clock at night and knock me out, I'd probably weigh 50 pounds less.
Yeah, you want to be knocked out?
Yeah, that'd be good. Concussion.
Every
night. Give me a concussion, and then I don't know where I am. Let's talk about football. The other day I thought it was interesting you said something about we're talking about run gap integrity. We talk about on this show just how sometimes run gap integrity chicken comes home to roost. And so, you know, sometimes that's just about playing team defense, right? And you said it's something interesting. You have to study your weaknesses, and it's just like a matter of just – taking care of it. It's not necessarily personnel that you get in here that are different. It's that everybody plays together.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you see run defense?
Exactly. Especially the way with our run defense, we are probably 90% single high defense, you know, and when you have eight men in the box, everybody has a gap.
Right.
So it's kind of easy to tell why the play went wrong or where it went wrong. And within that system, you know, it sounds easy. Everybody has a gap. But then that's when they start pulling people. That's when they start sliding people. That's when they start jet motion and receivers, getting guys going side to side really fast to get guys distracted and out of the gap. So you know, with any scheme or any system, they're great offensive coordinators and players out there that's going to break these systems and find the weaknesses in them. Yeah. So then you must go back and look at the film, watch all your explosive plays. Okay, well, this play went for 10, this play went for 15, and you just address them. You know, yeah. Those plays are going to go away. You will get more and more of them until you put the fire out. So I feel like that's something we've been focusing on early in the offseason. Just our weaknesses in the run defense.
Yeah, and last year, man, it was all the rage, the fly sweep. Like, everybody was running that. And this is like an old concept, you know, from when I was coaching. I would say at Liberty High School, they run the fly sweep. I don't know if they still do that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of splits your defense in half a little bit, right? You got to be really disciplined, kind of like read option, those kinds of things. It just seems like that there's – I like watching the chess match in the NFL that kind of goes back and forth. Do you feel like you guys have – done the right things to stop the fly sweep?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely to go back on what you said, it's definitely a copycat league. You know, yeah. Everybody's looking for what gave the last team success, especially if it ended with a win for that team. So that's why we're focusing on now. You know, we feel like we got a pretty good handle on the guys are knowing their responsibilities, eyes are in the right places, but we will only know until we get to showtime. You know, it all looks good till the lights are on and guys got to show up and make the plays. But as long as the guys are getting getting to the responsibility, knowing their responsibilities, that's a good start. And then we go to game, we play, and then we correct what's wrong.
I can't tell if you've got the most cutting-edge watch I've ever seen or the same calculator watch I had when I was in, like, fourth grade.
It's definitely the calculator watch you seen when you were growing up. Casio.
That's awesome.
Multilingual data bank. Illuminator calculator watch. It is. It has the day, date, time, and year on it. Digital to the second.
Hold on. And you can is a calculator on
it? And you can calculate a tip if you need to. It works. It works. Everything works.
What'd that run you, the Casio?
It was actually a gift.
Nice.
Our defensive back coach, he wears them every day. We cracked a couple jokes on him, then he bought everybody one, and I haven't taken mine off yet.
Hey, I hear patellar tendon, and I go, oh, no, you know, what was the extent of your injury and how are you feeling now?
It was a patellar tendon. It was a tear in the patellar tendon. The training staff did a great job managing me last year, just making sure I was able to get back on the field each week. It was a lot of bandaging going on. It was a lot of makeshift operations going on to get me out there every Sunday. But since then, and the surgery and the operation, you know, I feel amazing. I'm happy I went through with it. My body responded well from it. And since then, I've just been, you know, it's been a grind to get back to where I am today, out there practicing and participating and running around with the guys. I feel healthy, and I just plan to, you know, stay here as long as possible and contribute as much as I can now that I'm back.
I've heard you prefer to play strong safety, but you're just willing to go back to free if that's what they want.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like since I've been here, one of the most things I've been is versatile, whether they needed me at strong safety, extra safety, free safety. I even played a little dime last year. But, you know, everybody has their primary position they like to play. And, in a perfect world, I'd love to be a strong safety. But if in their perfect world, if that involves me playing, you know, free safety, then I'm a free safety that week. If I'm a dime that week, then I'm a dime, you know. You got to be able to go with the punches and do whatever it takes for the team to win.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
Big hit or interception?
Ooh, what
would you prefer? Because you like the physical part of being up in the box like a linebacker.
I do. But I'm still a defensive back, you know, and an ex receiver. So it's all about the ball. I got to go for the ball. I got to get a pick. You know, I feel like big hit is fine and all, but, you know, they still have the ball. They still got an opportunity to line up and score the next play. You know, that you win for those 10 seconds, but you take that ball away, you know, that's demoralizing. And we all know the turnover ratio and how big of an impact that is on winning games.
We're talking to Bradley McDougal. I'm wondering if you can do me a favor.
What's that?
I'm excited about Marquise Blair,
uh-huh.
But in trying to talk to him, he doesn't really talk. I mean, like, at all. Like, he is really quiet. Is that just with reporters? Is he louder in your guys' room, or is he just a quiet person?
Nah, he's a talker. He talks. It'll come out, but, I mean, I kind of like it. I mean, as a rookie, you shouldn't come in talking a lot anyway, you know. You want to be like grass, be seen and not heard, you know what I'm saying? So I'm sure it'll come around. His personality will come around, and he'll get to chirping, and then we can't get him to shut up, and then we'll wish we went back the other way. But, nah, he's a great kid, man. He's head on shoulder right. He's just playing ball, learning ball, and just taking it one day at a time.
You know, a rookie that's kind of quiet also like that, Cody Barton.
No,
he's not.
Oh, my goodness. He came in here and let it spill for like a half an hour. And then I was watching him at the scrimmage the other day, and he's on the sidelines. He didn't play, and he never stopped talking.
Yeah, he talked. Yeah, I had to walk away a couple times.
Is that what you do when a guy's too chatty? You just walk away from him, just leave
him? I either walk away in the middle of a conversation or act like my coach is talking to me.
Yeah, wait, what's that? Oh, okay, yeah, I'll be right there, coach. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. And if a guy just walks away during your conversation, what are you really going to do to him? Like, I guess he wasn't listening to me today.
I think Cody just keeps talking.
Oh, he will. He'll probably follow you.
You know, I did that a couple of times with my wife. That's not cool, apparently. You don't just walk. There's sometimes where I just go upstairs.
I thought it was the declaration of too many words.
I do say that too. But anyway, yeah. But you know, sometimes I would say this, Bradley. If a guy is like talking, at least it means he has some level of confidence. It seems like Barton does a lot of talking on the field. Are you out there with him very much? It seems like he's making checks.
I've got a couple reps in with Cody. Cody gets it. I like Cody. Cody, he has between the ears right now, and it's showing up. The game isn't moving too fast for him. He's able to get guys lined up, which is impressive for a rookie to come in. Because right now, a lot of these guys' heads are spinning. The game's moving fast. They're just worried about their position. They don't have any awareness to the guy standing next to him, what's his job, where he's supposed to be at. And then the more you know about the defense, you know, the longer you're going to make it out there. And then Cody stepped up. He made some plays. He's picked off Russ. I think he's had a couple picks. I can't say that.
No, you can't.
Because he definitely picked off Russ.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he's making some plays. He's showing up. I like him. But that's the biggest thing. You know, he gets it between the ears, and that's important for a middle linebacker.
Hey, Bradley, it said a lot to me when you came to Seattle and you signed originally, because there were two guys playing your position there, Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas, and yet you felt, what, confident enough to come here? That was a situation where you felt like someday you were going to be a starter, or what went into that thought process?
It was a lot that went into the thought process coming out. When I was a free agent, you know, I didn't have as many teams interested as I thought I would. It was Cleveland and Seattle, and Cleveland was offering the same amount of money as Seattle was. So that kind of threw me back, because I felt like Cleveland was way more in need of a safety than Seattle was. So I felt like their interest wasn't as high. And Seattle brought up a really good point. You know, they came to me and said, look, I know you got two really good all-pro guys ahead of you, but the reality is these guys haven't finished the whole season in the last 4 or 5 years, so you're going to get your chance to start. You know, you're going to come in here, you're going to get your time to make plays, and if it's a one-and-done you're looking for, you could get that, and you'll still get your opportunity to get started film and have a chance to go somewhere else, opposed to going to Cleveland and maybe having a struggling season, which they did that year. Of course, they change things around, but having a struggling season all year, and it's hard to get noticed on a bad team, just to be frankly honest with you. So I kind of took all those things in perspective, and I said, you know what, I'll just come here and I'll compete. And, one of the last things that stuck with me, Pete said, if you're a guy, you know, we'll find a way for you on the field. And he kept his word, and next thing you know, we had a 3-safety package out there. And then I end up getting my starts. So that's kind of how that all broke down.
Nice. And I don't think we can end a Bradley McDougald interview without asking about – how the French Bulldogs
That's
are doing.
The only reason I came over here. I knew y'all was going to ask about them.
How are they?
Roscoe and Baby Dog are doing well, man. They're in the doghouse, though, man.
What'd they do?
Roscoe peed on the couch.
Oh.
Yep. Roscoe peed. Yep.
Baby. He's not a puppy.
He's not.
What's he doing?
I don't know. I think he's just upset that I've been gone so much, and I've been in training camp, and they're in the house all day. And they're, you know, they're in the rooms. But, you know, they can't do that, Roscoe.
I got a theory on why he did it. He didn't like what you dressed him up in.
He doesn't like that, actually. He growled at me the other day. He's over it. There's no more dressing Roscoe up. He almost snapped at me. I was kind of scared of my own dog. Yeah. I don't know if you've ever been in that situation, but it's like, what do you do? This is supposed to be your dog, and he's about to attack you.
Yeah, well, stop dressing him.
What were you going to put him in? What kind of outfit?
So I was about to take him to this dog. It was a dog charity event where they, you know, you raise money for, you know, dogs. I had found some Chuck Taylors. So I had 4 Chuck Taylor shoes and a headband. It was like an athletic outfit. But the shoes kept coming off, and he just didn't like it. It wasn't appropriate for him. He didn't like it for some reason. I don't know. It looked sporty to me. It was trendy.
Yeah.
He had a little headband on. He had Chucks. It was tight.
But you said, Jim, you don't think dogs like that, right?
No, dogs don't like to be dressed up.
No, they hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're pets. So yeah. They're there for our entertainment.
They serve for your amusement.
That's what I would say.
I'm not going to dress River in anything.
Yeah. No?
No. Not
that might
a chance.
Be the funnest thing you could do.
Not a chance. I got to get you on Bark, though. Have you heard about Bark?
Uh-uh.
It's a podcast that's taken the world by storm.
Yeah?
Yeah. And the second season is going to be released next week. So would you come on Bark sometime, talk about your dogs? Just talk about your dogs.
Oh, yeah, for sure talk about dogs.
Great.
I'm bringing a baby dog to a practice soon.
Really?
Yeah, I've seen Juju do it, so it's a thing. I'm doing it.
Nice.
Yeah, he'll be on the field.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for him.
I know you did this on TV already, but I thought it was interesting, your response. We talked on TV about taking a walk in the park. On your Twitter line, you said that it's good for your spirit or your soul.
Both.
Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. When's the last time? Would you do that, like on an off day, go take a walk through the park?
I did take a walk yesterday. I took my dogs on a walk.
Did you?
Yep, sure did. It's
restored your soul.
Just a little getaway. And you don't take your phone either. That's like the other thing. Or if you have your phone, just don't be on it. Like, enjoy the walk. Enjoy the nature. Yeah. It's a thing. I'm late to the party. I'm late on the walk-in voyages. But, yeah, I try to get a little walk-in. My friend goes on hikes a lot and trails. I'm not that advanced yet, but I'll get there. I'll get there.
Nice. The Japanese call it deep forest breathing. You just go in there and just breathe deep and inhale the forest.
I respect it.
Bradley, thanks so much.
No problem.
I screwed it up, too. It's deep forest bathing. That's what they refer to it as. Deep forest bathing.
Oh, it's not breathing?
No. Just get into the forest and just kind of soak up all the oxygen-rich air.
Does anybody else think that Bradley McDougal is like the coolest dude ever?
Seahawks. Yeah, I would second that.
Is he the Cano of the Seahawks?
He is,
when it comes to smoothness?
He is. Oh, yeah. You know what else I would say? Best smelling Seahawk.
Really?
He came and sat next to us on the set at Q13. It's quite fragrant.
What
very
did he
nice
smell like?
Roses, some kind of a
cologne.
Remember what? Yeah, Robinson Cano used to always
rich mahogany.
Yes. Yeah, he's very very cool guy, but also a really good player. I like that he had to think about whether he wanted the big hit or the interception. I mean, he's right. The point of defense is getting the ball, and so you definitely want that, but I think he had to mull it over a little bit. Guy's got 8 career interceptions, and he took the hard road. I mean, first, he was committed to Ohio State, and then much to the chagrin of Nishant, our intern, because he's an Ohio State guy. But yeah, and then he decommitted and went to Kansas, and then he was a free agent. Went the free agent route and was in Tampa and had a couple of good years down there. And then, as he described in the interview there, you know, I think a lot of people would have gone to Cleveland with the offer to play, you know, same amount of money and, you know, to actually be able to get on the field right away. I think a lot of people would have gone to Cleveland.
Especially being a Columbus native. And, I remember that about him, too. I was thinking, wow, that's pretty cool that he went to Kansas instead of Ohio State. And I'm sure that he had a lot of people giving him grief, like you said, about that. The other thing, I remember there at Tampa Bay, he picked off Russell Wilson to end that game when the Seahawks were down there. And then the I think a few months later, signed with the Seahawks. So, yeah, I just always thought that was interesting, being a free agent, going to a situation where you're not going to be starting right away. In fact, you might not be starting the whole time you're here, and yet he just decided that he wanted to come here and make the most of it and thought it was a better opportunity than Cleveland. Clearly, it was.
What do you take away from that decision? Because I think those kind of moments are fascinating. Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett had similar decisions to make as free agents. Because you're looking at Bradley McDougal entered free agency. He didn't get the longer-term offer he wanted. And that was very true for Avril and Bennett as well in 2013. The longer-term offers that they were looking for didn't materialize. And so they end up signing for shorter-term deals on a team that is more talented, doesn't necessarily provide this guarantee of here's where you're going to play, but provides this invitation of you're going to come out here and compete. And I do think there are times that I feel that, look, Seattle's not the only team that preaches competition. Every team has that to a certain extent. The one thing that I think Seattle can point to, though, are examples of where they've let guys compete their way into spots that they wouldn't necessarily have figured or been expected to. And I think the ways that you see it are some of their free agent acquisitions and the undrafted rookies, for sure. That they give those guys an opportunity. I think it makes that sales job to Bradley McDougal, who's trying to weigh the same money between Cleveland and Seattle. Well, I can see that they actually do give guys opportunities to play their way onto the field.
You know, I was thinking also that it has to come into play, the facility and the way everybody treats you and how positive John Schneider is, how much he loves the player. Same thing with Pete. And then, you know, we talked to Deshaun Shedd a little bit about that in Detroit. From what I understand, it's kind of like it was when I was getting ready to be drafted, that they were a team that wasn't going to put a lot of money into their facilities and the people there. I mean, the Seahawks spare no expense, and it pays off. And so I think also that had to have factored into it, that, you know, do I want to be in this place? I like telling the story about when I was drafted, before the draft, that I went to Detroit, and their weight room was in a little racquetball court that you had to go through one of those little doors. Remember the old racquetball courts for some reason? There's a little door you had to scooch down and get under, and that's where their weight room was. And then, you know, the one in Kirkland, that new facility they had in 1986, was just beautiful. I mean, you could just see that this is a team that was more serious about winning and about, you know, sparing no expense to get their players ready. And so I think that also has to, you know, has something to do with his decision. It would have to, if all things were being equal. But, you know, he took the route, like he always has, of kind of the hard road, and it's paid off for him. And I'm loving seeing it. Boy, he almost had two picks in that very first game. He had three interceptions last year, and it was just all over the field. So happy to see him getting a chance to get out there and play.
Yeah, I just really appreciate that he came to Seattle, as we've been talking about, knowing that he was going to be the backup at two different positions and no chance. But, you know, just this idea of going in there and competing, and I know that we get the always compete from Pete and all that, but, I mean, so often you see athletes, you know, I see it at a younger age, Mikey and Stevie. I'd be more proud of them if they said, hey, I want to go and work into a position rather than going somewhere where it's just given to you. And so I think it's really cool, and that was why I asked him about it, because I thought, wow, that really says something about him as a player.
Yeah, and I think that personality is in a lot of those guys. I mean, look at what we've heard from these guys. Trey Flowers, we interviewed him during the OTAs, and he talked about, look, I hold myself to a high standard. And then same thing with Shaquille Griffin. He gave himself a D last year, and, you know, just and how he talks about trying to be a better person, a better man, a better leader, all these things. I mean, they get the right kind of guys in here. And I think more than, you know, playing ability, it's about profiling these guys' personalities, that they are going to compete not only against, and this is the most important thing, I think, is competing against yourself, you know, trying to get your best you. And that's all I ever wanted. You know, well, like a competition at the highest level, I think is sometimes seen the wrong way. It's not that you want to beat somebody else or be better than them. It's that you want to be the best version of yourself. And then if that's good enough, then fine. And if not, then fine. But that to me is something that you see in all of these players.
Do you think he'll get his preference of playing strong safety versus free safety?
I sure hope so. I think so. I think, you know, I talked to Moyer, who coached and played safety, and he's like, well, you know, you have Tedrick Thompson back there. He played okay last year, you know, and I think we're trying to – you can't expect him to be Earl Thomas, whoever the free safety is. But, you know, you've got a lot of different chances from, you know, Ugo Amadi possibly. We'll see about Marquise Blair. I mean, there's, again, not resume players, but – it is competitive to see which one of those guys is going to start. And I just think Bradley McDougal is so good at covering tight ends and guys down inside. I think he's the best. I think he's an upgrade from Cam Chancellor, and I think it's better to have him up in the box because he's a very physical player as well.
He comes here 2 years ago without really a spot, right? He comes here on the promise of you get to play your way onto the team. He's now the veteran member of that secondary. He's kind of the leader, and there's a lot of parts around him that people are still competing for. But the leader of the defense is Bobby Wagner. He was not practicing today for a procedure. We got more details about that next.
This is Danny Dave and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
5 o'clock refresh brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Bobby Wagner not practicing today. Should we worry about it? Pete Carroll doesn't sound worried.
He's had the procedure before. That's not his first time. So it's kind of a I don't even know how to. The reason I'm not telling you what it is because I don't know what it is. Okay, so I would tell you if I knew. But he's done it a couple times before. It's been successful for him and it's helped him out over the years. So it just felt like it was time to do it, and so we took the time to go.
And that treatment is platelet-rich plasma. PRP, Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, he talked about that a little bit earlier and has confirmed that that was the treatment that Bobby's undergone, which essentially means taking your own blood, getting it spun around to get all the good stuff, all of the platelet-rich plasma, and then re-injecting that into an affected area with the idea that that will stimulate some of the healing.
Yeah, we've seen players do this before, and used to be, wasn't there something where you had to go to Sweden?
That's Regenikine. Or Orthokine. Orthokine is the original, and then Regenikine was an updated version of that.
Yeah, Sidney Rice went over there.
Yeah,
and they knocked on somebody's door and played a video game with him.
That's right. But Bobby, I don't know if he didn't have to go out of state or anything, did he?
I don't think so. I think this is one. And the reason with the Orthokine and then Regenikine is that that's something that you have to go out of the country to get because it's nothing.
That's approved here.
The FDA regulations I'm reading right now from stemcellarts.com. Does that sound reputable?
Sure.
While Regenikine, and it says that per FDA regulations, the Regenikine treatment manipulates the blood sample too much and would now be considered a drug. Therefore, this procedure is not allowed in the United States. You heat it up and it includes glass beads, is what it says. It includes heating the cells and culturing them with glass beads. Sounds weird.
That does sound
weird. Messing with your blood.
Yeah. But, I mean, look, I'm sure it's something proven. Bobby wouldn't go and do something that's, you know, going to be crazy or get him tested positively or anything. You know, I was thinking about him on the way over because as we were out there watching the scrimmage, they started off with a 9-on-7 period, which is basically a run. It's a running drill where kind of like 7-on-7 where you don't have the linemen. This, you don't have the DBs or, you know, or the receivers. So, and the very first play, Bobby just shoots through a gap and makes tackle for like 4 yards, which he didn't tackle the guy, but he could have. And just watching that and doing exactly what you expect him to do, I'm just trying to think if there is a better pro than Bobby Wagner. You know, if you're the NFL and say, this is a guy, I mean, I think he's up there with like Drew Brees. I think he's up there with a guy like Russell Wilson. I mean, he is the epitome of what a pro is. Bobby off the field, nothing, but he does a lot of charitable things, just nothing but class all the way through and continually just makes plays after play after play. He's just been such an awesome pro. I don't know that we've really even recognized him the way we should.
I got an interesting question. Well, you guys can decide if it's interesting. You'll be the judge of that, Dave. Who is the second best draft value the Seahawks have gotten? Russell's the first.
Right.
You get a franchise quarterback in the third round. That is something that happens once in a decade. To get a player as good as he is, I mean, that's on par with finding Tom Brady in the sixth
round. Right, third round.
So you're talking about current players.
Yes. Of the Pete Carroll, John Schneider. No, anybody that Pete Carroll, John Schneider were here to draft. Because Bobby Wagner's a second-round pick. And is one of the top two at his position. Earl Thomas was a first-round pick at number 14. And that doesn't diminish Earl's status as a player, but the idea that you get an all-pro safety with the number 14 overall pick, that's less surprising than you getting an all-pro middle linebacker with the 50-something pick, whatever they used for Bobby Wagner.
It'd be Richard Sherman, wouldn't it?
I think Sherman. Is Bobby ahead or behind of Cam Chancellor? Cam Chancellor was a fifth-round pick. And is he behind or ahead of Earl Thomas? I think those are I think those are the guys that are on my list of the top five draft values that they've had in this time.
He's played 103 games. He's missed 9 games in his so far. This is going into his 8th year, which it feels like he's been here longer than that, just because of the productivity of him. Over 115 sacks every year, 168. A couple of years ago, 139. He's got 16 and a half sacks. I mean, yes, he was drafted in the second round, and you're right. I always like to say that Sherman is that guy just because I think corner is really hard to play. But now I'm looking at Bobby, that he is probably second behind Russell Wilson.
Because Sherm didn't make it to a third contract. And I also think that you include some of the disruption that Sherm caused. Like that's part of the package. And,
I was just considering play on the field.
Yeah, I would.
Well,
think
and then the value of the fifth round. When did Chancellor go? Was he fifth round?
Fifth round as well.
So I'd still put him ahead of Bobby Wagner since you got him in the fifth. But then I'd put Bobby ahead of Earl.
It's an interesting question.
Where do you have it?
I don't know because I just came up with it.
really, we're
Danny
doing,
just we're, invented this
doing,
in his head.
We're doing
I was
talking
on the fly
on this show,
and all of a sudden, Danny like cocked his head like a dog would when it heard a noise, and then out came that question.
I like the question.
It is a great question. Yeah. How about Doug Baldwin?
Doug Baldwin is way up there too
because he's a free agent,
undrafted free agent. Baldwin might be still though, man. Bobby Wagner's an All-Pro. He's the only member of the Seahawks team that's gotten an MVP vote.
Yeah. Here's the other thing. Name a time when he said or did anything that was either combative or sort of insubordinate.
That's part of this conversation, right? Because I told you can't. And in a locker room full of a bunch of apparently kind of at times lunatics, like he is a very calm, measured professional.
Right. Yeah, and he's been a calming force for everyone.
I miss talking to him. I always enjoyed interviews with Bobby Wagner, but it's been a while since we've talked to him.
You going to challenge him to a pool match again? Or recite Kendrick Lamar raps for him? That was another one of
them. You
know, right?
I went home after that when he challenged me to come up with some lyrics and to sing a rap song. I went home for a while. I worked with Stevie on a Kendrick Lamar song. I think it was a Loyalty one. Yeah, I literally was standing there, you know, just a klutzy old white guy in my family room with Kendrick Lamar on the big screen, and I was trying to do the whole Loyalty song.
Yeah, that's the first time that an interviewee has made you sing and do something. Usually it's you trying to get them to do something, and he got you. So that counts for something.
Yeah, well, it worked with Will Disley, though.
Oh, it was great with
Will
Disley.
Yeah, but Bobby turned the tables on you.
Yeah, he did.
He had you at home on rapping. I think I might – I think I'd put Bobby Wagner ahead of Sherm.
Yeah.
Sherm was a better player at his peak, but the length of tenure, and he plays a more valuable position than middle linebacker. I think even though that Sherm was a fifth round pick and Bobby Wagner was a second round pick, I think I'd put Bobby and everything that he's meant and the way that he's kind of been the one that they've kept in this transition to the next chapter of the defense, the next generation of the defense. I think that really counts for something.
You know what though? I would still make the case with Bobby because four All-Pros. Now, first-team All-Pro, that's something much more than the Pro Bowl. So, I mean, he's got six Pro Bowls, but, you know, All-Pro, that is particularly good.
Yeah, so. It is. Russell Wilson is going to be on Brock and Salk tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Jake Heaps and Brock Salk going to be doing it, so it's going to be a little quarterback club. They're going to get together.
Brock Salk.
Oh, did I say Brock Salk?
So, yeah.
Brock and Salk. Brock Heward. And Jake Heaps.
At least you haven't screwed up the name of our own show, as I did when I was running it.
What'd you say it was?
I don't know. I think I actually mispronounced my name.
Derv?
Yeah, something like that. Called me the wrong name. I don't know if it gets any worse than that. Anyway, Brock and Jake.
Brock and Jake.
We always have something to aspire to.
Yeah. Yeah. Brock Heward, Jake Heaps, and we'll be joined by Russell Wilson. That's tomorrow at 8 a.m. We got two more tickets to the Mariners to give away, and sound you're going to want to hear as a player's father reacts to his first home run. That's next.
You're listening to Danny David Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right. It's our last pair of tickets to give away. Here's your chance to win two tickets to this Friday's Mariners game. They host the Rays. Mike Zunino and friends coming to town. You can take the third caller at 206-421-3776. Third caller, 206-421-3776. And come by early. Stop by our live broadcast at Edgar's Cantina from 3 to 6 p.m. The tickets and our broadcast are brought to you by Greg's Japanese Auto. I have not heard the sound that I'm about to play for you. I have been told that the sound is absolutely fantastic. A Marlins player, a rookie, it's going to be his third at bat against Mariners fireballer Jake DeGrom. DeGrom's awesome, right? One of the better reigning Cy Young Award winner in the National League. And as part of the human interest piece, in his third at bat on a 1-2 pitch, his father is being interviewed.
And we're with Raul Jr., his brother. This is Lala, his sister here, enjoying the ice cream along with Grandma Carmen. And Raul, is this an emotional day for you?
Very, very emotional.
Oh!
Ison Diaz is the name of the player who homered there. That's pretty fantastic.
That was the crack of the bat, too. I mean, you could hear right away. So, I mean, it's just nothing better for a father. You know, I was going to ask you, Jim, what's the, like, the most proud you've been of your kids, whether it's a sporting event or anything, where you get like an immediate like win, right? I mean, it's like over time, you know, a kid brings home A's and things like that, but just like one event where it's like...
Well, it probably happened last week. We were down in San Diego, and they were playing in a tournament, a 15-year-old team, the Bellevue Dragons, and they were going against a bunch of 16-year-old teams, and they ended up winning the tournament, and Stevie had the walk-off single up the middle, and you just... You sit there and you realize it's not really the World Series or anything, but your kid's up at bat. And I was telling people, you don't really – it's not like you want your kid to be a hero, but you don't want him to fail either. And so when he hit that one up the middle, it was just – yeah, it was just – God, I almost had tears in my eyes. You know, yeah. You're just so excited about – you know, you're happy that your kid came through. But I thought the reporter did a great job with just not trying to do the interview and just right. letting it happen.
Yeah.
So you could get the emotion of what was going on.
Right, because anybody who's a dad, you know, would know exactly how that must feel. Yeah, I had one of those moments yesterday. My daughter, Kendall is her performance name, was performing at this music festival over there. And we had a especially touching moment. I'm off to the side, and she's up on the stage and just getting warmed up. And she looks over and locks eyes with me, and I lock eyes with her, and then... She extends her middle finger towards me. And
that just shows how much she loves you, then, though.
And then she had a good laugh on her behalf and then went off and played a heck of a show.
And she was featured in the Seattle Times, too, in the
yeah.
Friday
Thanks
special
section
there.
Thanks for bringing in the there. Paper. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is very
Jess
cool.
Jess particularly liked that one.
It was pretty good.
Can you hear me through the glass?
Yes, we can.
Yes, it was fantastic.
Anyway, yeah, but I mean, when your kid does something like that, I mean, all you could do is scream. So awesome for that guy.
Those moments are really, and look, we go through all sorts of different things and analyzing the teams that we cheer for. There is, at a very basic level, we watch sports for that sort of cathartic rush of success, to watch someone feel validated over their risk and overcoming, whether it's performing at a music festival, whether it's at the plate in a crucial situation. That's what makes sports fun to watch and fun to talk about. And I love those moments when you've got a guy, every person who reaches the NFL or reaches Major League Baseball, they're living out a dream that they're incredibly fortunate to have been in a position to even fulfill. And those moments are really cool about sports. It's one of the best things that sports does for us.
It was really neat at the Hall of Fame, and I didn't hear a lot of them, but I heard. I was just at a well, I was at a bar in Issaquah, and I was looking up when Ed Reed was talking, and yeah, you didn't even need to hear what he was saying, and they kept showing his mom, and you could just see how. Yeah, the thanks that they give to their parents and how much the parents have been there the whole way.
Yeah, driving them to practices and just supporting them the whole way. So Kevin Mawai also, I saw that he was talking to his parents. So, yeah, very cool moment there. I just love that guy. I could listen to that 100 times, just the screaming. And it's pretty awesome audio, too, because of the crack of the bat there.
You hear the reaction. And talking about Miami Marlins rookie who – batting his third at bat in this game against Jacob DeGrom, and he hit in his first major league game, he hit his first home run.
And we're with Raul Jr., his brother. This is Lala, his sister here, enjoying the ice cream along with Grandma Carmen and Raul. Is this an emotional day for you?
Very, very emotional.
Favorite sports chant ever. Let's go!
It is amazing how many times you see a player turning to his teammates, to the crowd, after something happens, exhorting them, let's go. It is undefeated in terms of the most popular chant.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's all you can think of to say is, yeah, let's go. And it works in every situation, doesn't it?
Almost as versatile as Go Cougs.
Go Cougs works in every situation, too, doesn't it, Jess?
Yeah, pretty much. Do you ever use it as liberally as you do?
Do you ever use it to express sorrow? Go Cougs.
Yes.
I think sometimes it's also to sort of gloss over stupidity.
Go Cougs.
No.
Even-keeled.
You make a mistake and then go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
My favorite two words ever. Yeah, it's just go Cougs. I mean, it just sums everything up perfectly, doesn't it?
For you.
Yeah.
How about Edwin R. Murray?
No.
Is that?
No.
It's Danny David
Moore. Edward R. Murrow.
We got the professor.
Get it straight.
Edwin.
Edward.
Murphy.
No. Go ahead, Danny.
John Clayton next.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn,
because knowledge is power.
It is time to find out what we've learned. It's brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Jess!
Guys, great to see you this Monday.
It was very fun. Very fun show.
A lot of fun today. Including our Seahawks guest today, Bradley McDougal, who taught us a little bit about gummies.
I had no idea there was a difference in the quality of gummy worms.
Well, you're not a gummy bear connoisseur then.
Seriously, yeah. What makes a good gummy worm?
Freshness. Freshness and texture. It needs to be squishy because there's hard gummy bears.
Right.
You know, like the ones that are like, oh, wait, it's supposed to be gummy. So you want it to be gummy. Do you know Swedish fish? I don't like Swedish fish. No. I don't like the texture of them.
Yeah. You know what's good, though, is the Scandinavian swimmers from Trader Joe's. Same thing.
That
but
sounds like
super
a knockoff,
tasty.
A cheap knockoff.
It's an expensive
knockoff.
But they're really
knockoff.
Good.
With the gummies, there's not a bigger variance of quality in any candy than gummy bears.
Yeah.
Because if you get the hard ones, it's
so good.
Terrible.
Might as well throw them away.
He said, "It's over with.
It's over with. Done."
What do they taste like anyway? I've never really had them. Gummy worms.
It tastes like gummy bears.
Do they taste like juji fruits?
But they're in a shape of a worm.
Juji fruit is harder. It's a harder candy.
You could not eat those at your current state of dental activity right now.
No, juji fruit, you chew them after you suck on them for a while.
Yeah, you don't ever suck on the gummy worm, gummy bear, gummy fruit ring. You just chomp on them. They're like gelatinous.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I didn't know there was so much that went into being a gummy worm eater.
Yeah, and then also the analysis of it on a afternoon drive talk show.
Hey, never Bradley McDougal's popular. He's allowed to analyze anything he wants.
Yeah.
We also learned a little bit about walking away from people while they're talking from him.
Is that what you do when a guy's too chatty? You just walk away from him, just leave
him? I either walk away in the middle of a conversation or act like my coach is talking to me.
Yeah, wait, what's that? Oh, okay, yeah, I'll be right there, coach. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't. And if a guy just walks away during your conversation, what are you really going to do to him? Like, okay, so I guess he wasn't listening to me today.
I think Cody just keeps talking.
Oh, he will. He'll probably follow you.
You know, I did that a couple of times with my wife. That's not cool, apparently. You don't just walk away. There would be some times where I'd just go upstairs.
That's mean.
What? Yeah, I've had my wife say to me directly, can we just not talk for a little while?
Well, sometimes I'll come down. Sometimes I'll come down and get like an ice pack for my knee, and then I got a plate of food and a drink in my hand, and I'm like walking upstairs, and then she will talk to me, and I'll like inch towards the stairs, and then like slowly start to climb them, just to see if.
There's any verbal cues, visual cues that are being
picked message.
Up.
Yeah.
I stop everything I'm doing when Kathy starts talking, and I listen to every word. I hang on every word.
Very intently.
Yes, very intently. Actually, one of the advantages to being in your 60s is that if your wife's talking to you, you can act like you don't hear her, and sometimes you really don't. And so you could just use hearing loss as a reason why you walked away.
I bet it's more difficult to use that as an excuse when you talk about using that as an excuse on the radio.
She doesn't listen to the show.
You hope.
Well, occasionally, but I'll roll the dice.
Seriously, what do you do when you have an annoying teammate? There have to be annoying teammates. And
one thing that used to annoy me is when guys would describe what happened on the field and do it like full speed. Like, so he jammed me, and then they would actually jam you in the shoulder. Like, dude, just describe it to me. You don't need to. And then he gives me the head slap, you know, and that used to annoy me.
Would you ever respond in kind to that? Like, here's, you head slap me, I head slap you.
No, I would just like push them away and just say, use your words.
Use your words.
Finally, today we learned that Danny's nephew, John Riley, has the best recollection of things.
Here's the other thing that I've taught Riley, and Dave, this will come as a surprise to you. Mm. How did Dave injure himself once?
Well, he was angry at his neighbor, and then he punched a box that had a bunch of stuff in it. And he broke his hand. But then he was talking to his friends and said, oh, yeah, I was working on some marble stuff, and then it kind of slipped on my hand and kind of broke it. And then they were like, so would you punch it?
Is that an accurate recollection of the story, Dave?
Don't you have anything better to do than teach poor John Riley these boring stories of my past? That was a dumb thing to do, am I right, John Riley?
Maybe.
Yeah?
Not really, though.
Wait, it wasn't dumb to punch something?
Well, it was dumb for him to punch something, but for you to tell me was not dumb.
The kid's a riot, man.
He's really fun.
Yeah, good response on the text over here.
He cracks me up. He seriously makes me laugh.
He gets a kick out of you, too, you can tell.
Yeah,
he's certainly got a bit of a ham in him about liking to perform. It's been a blast having him here.
How old is he?
10.
Usually 10-year-olds, if you have a microphone in front of them, they'll have one or two-word responses, but that kid, yeah, he can light up a room.
He's pretty funny.
He's a young Danny O'Neill.
No, I was not nearly that outgoing, nor did I have the recall that he has. He's got a pretty insane memory. Yeah. And then he told me he gets bad grades in history. I was like, how is that possible? You'll recite to me ad nauseum the history of Godzilla films. And he's like, well, they don't teach that at my school. That's going to do it for us. We want to thank Bradley McDougall for joining us, Ryan Divish, who was our guest, the Professor John Clayton, my niece, Myla Blue, my nephew, John Riley, my sister, Robin, who's been in town, and the patience and hospitality of my coworkers, starting with Jessamyn McIntyre, our producer. Matt Nelson was on the board, the three of us. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 3 on Danny, Dave, and Moore.